Chapter 1. It's funny, but we always think of the heart as pumping, as if it's some sort of perpetual propulsion machine, endlessly spewing blood through our veins. We so rarely think of the other side of the mechanics of the heart, the drawing, sucking. In order to pump blood, the heart must first draw blood into itself. It's a two-step process, the ba-dump of the heartbeat. The next time your heart is racing, I mean really racing, like it does after an extended run or in a moment of complete desperate terror, spend a moment to stop and take inventory of what that feels like. You'll notice that it's not the pumping of the heart that you really feel. It's there, of course, but it's sort of in the background. What you really feel, if you pay close attention, is your heart frantically drawing blood into itself so that it has enough to pump back out again. It's your heart playing a game of catch-up with itself. It's demand outstripping supply. I have plenty of time to mull this sort of thing over while I'm waiting. I don't just charge into someone's house like a scheme-assed redneck knocking over a liquor store. I do things right, because I have no desire to be caught. I wait patiently outside the back door, in the dark, the knife cold and glistening in my hand. I use a Lin Sting when I kill with a knife. It's a beautiful piece of work. 4-inch damask blade, perfectly balanced, giraffe bone handle. It's slim and sharp. I'm not Jason Voorhees. I do my work with finesse. This knife set me back almost $400, and I have never regretted a single penny. He's in the kitchen, putting away his groceries. I can hear the refrigerator door open. The shelves rattle. Bottles clink together on the fridge door. Then I hear him walk out of the room momentarily. He left the fridge open. I can't fucking believe it. Who does that? This man is begging me to murder him, if only for the greater good. After a few moments, he comes back in and sets a second bag of groceries down on the table. He closes the refrigerator and opens a cupboard. He's getting closer to the door. He's getting closer to me. He crumples up the plastic grocery bags and throws them in the trash. On principle, this makes my blood boil, but I have to stay cool. I do things right, and I can't have my righteous hatred of this brain-dead piece of meat muddling things in my head. Plus, this last bit of Echo Abomination was exactly what I needed. The discarded grocery sacks topped off the trash bag. He pulls the bag out of the can, ties it off, and heads toward the back door. I slide backward a step into the shadow. He'll open the door toward me, hiding me from view. There's no chance he'll push the door open enough to hit me. Nobody is that enthusiastic about taking out the trash. The door opens. It stops just in front of my face, in front of my huge, toothy smile. Like his shadow, I follow behind him silently. The floodlights on the garage cast shadows backward, so he has no indication that I'm here. Not a sound, not a shadow. I don't exist. He takes the lid off the trash can, and I swiftly and silently bring my left hand around his shoulder, quickly puncturing his trachea. The trash can lid falls to the cement driveway with a dim clatter, nothing anyone would notice. I can feel the rush of wind escaping his throat through the thin layer of latex on my hand. Business first. Make sure he can't scream. A scream, that's the sort of thing neighbors notice. Of course, after the initial seconds of panic, he's going to try to fight back, so I quickly take a step back, let him turn around to face me, and bring my foot down as hard as I can on his kneecap, like breaking branches of firewood. In fact, that's the same sort of sound, more of a crunch than a crack. It's not the clean vertical fracture you get when you fall off your bike as a child, but more of a splintering. He falls in a heap on the ground. Now he can't fight back, he can't run away, and he can't scream. Now I can really get down to what I do.